Today's episode is brought to you by HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get fresh, pre-measured ingredients with mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door. Skip all those trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. You can now enjoy cooking and get dinner on the table in 30 minutes or less. With over 25 recipes to choose from each week, there is something for everyone to enjoy. All recipes are designed and tested by professional chefs and nutritional experts to ensure both deliciousness and simplicity. So this week we got cherry balsamic chicken with almond couscous and roasted carrots. And this couscous is delicious. The cherry balsamic sauce is amazing too, but I make this couscous for lunch some days because it is that good. Go to the link in our show notes to get $80 off, including free shipping on HelloFresh, the number one meal kit.
A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. And I think I'm going to make a lot of people happy today.
I know you are, because when you texted me the name of this case, I was like, oh, I know it. And not because I know the case, because I literally know nothing. I know it because I've probably entered it on our request list about 10 times.
Yes, exactly. Like, we have gotten numerous, and I mean numerous, requests for this case. And I feel like it was a couple of days ago, but I'm not really sure. Melissa screenshotted me another email, and she was kind of like, you got to do this at this point. And the reason why it's me is because it doesn't take place, obviously, in the 2000s. So a lot of people strongly suggested that it would be a good case and an appropriate case for me.
Just to shout everyone out, it was Nicole, Lily, David, Amanda, Allison, and Sarah.
That's a lot for this one case, honestly, that doesn't even take place in any recent history. And I don't think it's one of those things that you Google and it pops up the first thing. Like, if you were to Google something like really bizarre missing persons cases, like, it doesn't even make those lists. So the fact that all of you out there know who this person is in this case just is astounding to me. You must be like true crime aficionados.
Well, I'm excited to hear the story.
All right. I'm glad. So I'm going to jump in then if you don't have any more housekeeping.
No, go for it.
The case I'm going to cover today is the case of Trenny Lynn Gibson. Trenny actually was born Teresa, from what I understand, but you will never see that anywhere. She's always referred to as Trenny. So Trenny Lynn Gibson was raised in Knoxville, Tennessee. She was born to Hope and Robert, and they had two other children, Robert Jr. and Tina. It appears to me as though Robert is older and Tina is younger, so Trenny is the middle child. Trenny was born on August 17th of 1960, which really, this is the week of her birthday, and she would have just celebrated her 61st birthday today. Trenny was 16 years old when she went missing. Until this point, she had some part-time work at the mall, and she was really working to save a lot of money, whether it was for college or whatever it might have been, but she was kind of responsible in that way and worked hard. Trenny was also a student at Bearden High School, and she loved horticulture, and she planned to study plants, trees, and other living things at the University of Tennessee. By all accounts, Trenny was a smart and lovely young lady. She really seemed to do what she was supposed to do. She went to school and worked hard. She had goals. She had dreams. I don't gather, actually, that she was much of an extrovert. She stayed close to home. She stayed with her family. She really just, we might call it sheltered, but it doesn't sound like it's in a negative way. It's just kind of the way that things fell.
Okay.
A school field trip was planned for October 8th of 1976. This trip appeared to be related to Trenny's horticulture class, and about 40 students were expected to attend, including the horticulture teacher. There were no other chaperones, so the teacher was solely responsible for a whole bunch of teenagers that far outnumbered him. And the funny part about this, which I don't imagine for the time it was unusual, but looking back and knowing how things have changed, it is unusual to me now. So Trenny knew she was going on a field trip, and she knew what day it was going to be and everything. However, she didn't know for sure if they were going to go because the field trip depended on weather. So she really didn't know how she should dress or what she should bring or anything like that. And to make matters worse, they knew they'd be outside, but they didn't know where the destination was.
Wait, what?
I know, it sounds nuts, and I totally think that this is just what they did in the 70s. So, you know, absolutely no judgment. Hindsight is 20/20 and all of the things that have changed, but it's just so hard for me to imagine being like, oh, you're going on a field trip Thursday? Oh, like, we'll figure it out when you get there? Oh, okay, no problem.
Yeah, that's weird.
I know. It's so funny. It's, you know, looking back on things, and sometimes you hear kids at 8 years old watching like their five younger siblings or whatever. It's like, wow, people did these things. Anyway, I digress. So when they did get to school and they realized that the weather would hold or that it was going to be fine and the field trip was on, they got on the bus, and it is at that point they received the announcement from the horticulture teacher that the destination they would be going to was the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. They departed around 9 a.m. The trip to the park was approximately an hour and 40 minutes. So I did the math, and I figured that they would arrive around 10:40 to 10:45, possibly even 11. However, in one or two articles I read, it's estimated that they arrived around 12, which can also make sense considering you're in a bus, and buses tend to drive slower, and who knows if they were on the highway or if they took the main roads there or whatever. So, you know, as much as I want to say 10:45 or so, it probably is accurate in articles. And to go by that, they arrived at noon. On the bus, Trenny sat next to Robert Simpson. Robert was a senior and a friend of Trenny's brother. And Robert would have been only probably like a year younger than Trenny's brother. So Trenny's brother had graduated, and he went off to the Navy. He had actually just arrived home within the last few days, and I believe he asked Robert to just keep an eye on Trenny, like, you know, take care of my baby sister. And this is where I've come to learn, or at least I can make an assumption, that Trenny is a little bit sheltered in that way, because in one of the articles I read, at some point Trenny's brother had said, the reason he said that was that Trenny had really never left home for a whole day going far away without anyone in her family.
Oh, that makes sense.
Right. So I think he, you know, saw his friend or talked to his friend and said, you know, just keep an eye on her. I'm kind of worried she maybe doesn't know exactly what to do, or, you know, who, inexperienced, I guess. So when the bus arrived at the park, they parked at Klingman's Dome. And I'm actually going to have Melissa post some social media pictures so that you know what Klingman's Dome looks like, and you'll kind of know how far certain points are on this trail. So the instructions that were given by the horticulture teacher were that they were going to separate into some smaller groups, because remember, there's 40 kids. They all had to hike to Andrews Bald. And when I look at this on a map, Google Maps says it's about a 2 mile walk, and it probably would take you about 40 minutes on foot. So each way would be 4 miles and maybe an hour and a half. But the instructions continued that they were supposed to observe all of the trees and the plants and the flowers on this trail and meet back at the bus at 3:30 p.m. So 2 miles doesn't seem like a lot, and a total of 4 miles doesn't seem like a lot. But when you're with a group of other kids and you're kind of dragging and looking at things on the trail, it's probably going to be double that time, I would suspect.
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
Right. So the students were told to stay on the trail and don't detour or explore anywhere else. This is strictly where you're supposed to go. Within the group that Trenny was in, Robert remained in that group with Trenny, and the first part of the hike seemed successful. They had made it to Andrew's Bald and had lunch. It's at this point that it's stated in a couple of articles that Trenny and Robert sat together and they were fine. There was nothing going on. They were bantering back and forth, and she even shared part of her sandwich with him.
Now, were there other people in their group?
So, yes, there was. And, well, I guess I'll just tell you now. Like, when asked to go over the afternoon, a lot of people were able to remember parts. But I get it. Like, they weren't focused on one or two particular people. You know, they're busy and they're engaging in other things. So they don't have, like, the clearest picture of what happened, right? At this point, too, it appears as though somewhere in here, Robert gave his jacket to Trenny, which is just good future information. As soon as lunch was finished, instead of continuing to explore Andrew's Bald like the other students, Trenny decided to head back to the bus, or at least towards the bus. It is reported that Trenny was pretty underdressed, like I said, and the weather, although it held up, it's October and it's not that great. So she, like I said, is wearing Robert's brown and orange plaid jacket that he was nice enough to give her. As Trenny set off, she caught up with another group of students. So that's basically like she, you know, someone else is ahead of her on the trail, or maybe they're even on their way to Andrew's Bald. I'm not sure, but those group of students do remember seeing Trenny. They stayed together for a little while. She kind of remained with that group. And then they actually decided to sit down for a while to rest. But I guess Trenny just wanted to keep going, so she got up from that group and kept going ahead of them. Another group of students noted that they spotted Trenny alone, kind of crouched down, maybe looking at something. Like, if you had seen a rare bug or a flower on the ground, you might crouch down lower to see what that is. And then some students reported they saw her stand up and kind of turn right off the trail. There were other very brief sightings by students as well, maybe just eye shot glance of her. They weren't really worried. They were all kind of assured that they'd see her on the bus at 3:30 when they were due back at Klingman's Dome. When arriving back at the bus at 3:30, many noticed immediately that Trenny was missing. I'm sure they're doing a count and making sure that everyone came back so they don't leave anyone behind. I'm sure no one was thinking that anyone was lost, and it's just like, gotta keep count so we can stay here for the stragglers. At this point, the teacher and another student hiked back to the trail and searched for Trenny, and when they couldn't find her, they contacted the park service. I read this happened at 4:30, but I also read in another article or two that it was 6 o'clock. To me, that's kind of a big difference. However, if I conclude that the teacher and the student properly checked the whole trail, it would seem to me it'd probably be more like 6, because it takes 40 minutes to go one way all the way up to Andrew's Bald and then another 40 back. That seems tight to make the phone call around 4:30, but that's neither here nor there. At this point, the teacher stayed behind, and he had no choice but to send the bus back because all of these kids needed to get home at this point. They had parents waiting at the school. We don't have cell phones to say, hey, we're running late, so they gotta go. It wasn't until 8 p.m., though, that Trenny's mother received word that her daughter was missing. So almost immediately, a search was conducted. The weather, the temperatures, the terrain is not that great, so they actually had to call off the search at 3 a.m. It was just too dangerous, too foggy to see or accomplish anything. It is worth noting that, you know, as the teacher and the student headed back to the trail to look for her, they called out her name and everything, and they did not hear her. Very quickly, the next couple of days, they had search teams come in, And like I said, it was really tough terrain. And the weather was uncooperative. Actually, people even got injured. It was reported that one person fell and cracked several ribs and needed to be transported to the hospital for treatment for that. So it's no joke. Like, this isn't just a hike on a man-made trail that you can take your dog on for a leisurely afternoon walk.
So I don't know if you know this, but it's actually in North Carolina. Klingman's Dome is like an actual location. And we drove right past it on our road trip last October.
I actually did not know that. So what you're saying is, because I actually didn't look at the location between Knoxville and the national park, it sounds like it runs through multi-states, or at least two states.
Oh, yes. Yes. And it's literally just over the North Carolina line. But it's one of the places that we put on our list to drive when we were on our road trip.
Yeah. And you know what? That's actually even more shocking to me. And again, no judgment to 1976, because that's what they did. But it's just harder to wrap my head around taking a bus of kids across state lines when you never gave parents a heads up. You're just like, this is surprise destination.
Yeah, no. That's crazy to me. But
that's fascinating.
Here nor there.
Yes.
Sorry, I didn't mean to sidetrack you.
You're good. You're good. No, it was a good conversation. So they did what anyone else would do and still do to this day. They brought in search dogs. And they luckily did and were able to follow Trenny's trail. And it stated that they were able to follow Trenny's trail back from Andrew's Bald to Klingman's Dome. And they also detected her scent on a roadside before they lost it. I just have so many questions about that in general, because I feel like, how could you tell that you followed her trail back when she went up the same trail before that?
Yeah, that's actually a really valid point. Like, how do you know you're not getting her going up either way?
Right. Unfortunately, days later, the search scaled back significantly, and there were probably only like 20 volunteers or so helping in the search. And there was no sign of her, no shred of clothing, no nothing. And as time goes on, the volunteers grow less and less, and the search completely stops. During these searches, obviously, as we know, Trenny was not found, and not much about her. There was an area where the students claimed to have seen Trenny, where they were able to find some like broken ferns and some bushes. They found a half open bottle of beer and some cigarette butts. And they also found the same brand cigarette butts in the parking lot by Klingman's Dome. Other than that.
But what does that mean?
Well,
it's a public place.
That's a good question. But, you know, other than that, the trail went cold and there was no other signs, no other evidence, no other clues as to what happened to Trenny that day. So that's really where it ended up and where it's been for the last, like, 40-some-odd years. Currently, it's very devastating. Most of Trenny's whole family is dead. Her sister Tina died, her father died, her brother died, and I'm not 100% sure if her mother is still living, but there's really no one left to continue the search unless there's extended family doing it, unless there is people that care enough to continue the search. So I'm sure you want to know the theories.
Yeah, I'm really curious.
Well, there actually is a theory about her running away and leaving her life.
Not where I thought we were going, but, you know.
Right. I know. We'll get there. There is a theory that she was abducted and met foul play. There's a theory that she got lost and then she met foul play. It's that she had an accident and fell or something and succumbed to the elements and she was just never found. But yes, of a situation like this, there's surprisingly several theories at the end of the day. And I would say they're all as popular as the next. So if you want to start off with leaving your life, we can do that.
Yeah, if only because I want to almost throw it away right away. Like, I have no idea why I mean, is there anything in her life that would lead us to believe that could have happened?
I did not read anything that alluded to her being unhappy, suffering from depression or anxiety or family conflicts. She was not a bad student. There's no indication of drug use, substance use, a boyfriend or something like that, or struggling with anything really that would pose reason for her. She had left behind $200 in cash and $1,000 in her banking account that remained untouched.
Which is a lot.
It's a lot. But, you know, like I said, she was working really hard and saving all of her money from her job. And $1,000 back then is a wild guess, but I'm thinking like $5,000, $6,000 now. It took her a long time to save that.
Right. Okay. So I'm fine with ruling that one out.
So tied in with that one, too, is a lot of people are like, well, she might have had an accomplice that came and met her there, and they went away together.
But she didn't know where she was going and if she was going.
And that is actually the first argument that'll come up in argument to that theory, that that person would have had to have known that she was going there, and she didn't know where she was going, and she didn't have a cell phone because they just didn't exist. So I'm willing to kind of throw an accomplice out immediately. It doesn't make any sense to me. And with no reason to leave your life and having no clothing with you, no nothing to bring with you, and she's not even dressed for October elements in the mountains, I don't really see how she reasonably would have done that.
Okay, so I still want you to tell me about this guy.
So Robert Simpson?
Yes.
Okay, so I did leave that out as a theory, and it is a popular theory. So basically, there's a couple of weird things here. I mean, first of all, the second half of the trail back to the bus, like everyone goes to Andrew's ball, they have lunch, they go back down the trail and back to the bus, is mostly of his statement, right? However, what we do have to back that up is other students claim to have seen her on the trail, and they did not see him. Some of the challenges here is that people saw Trenny, but they also don't really remember seeing Robert. But I don't really know what to make of that. I mean, if I'm not making sure someone's memorable, they're not going to be memorable. So I don't know what you want to do with that. And then, you know, there would be a reason to harm her. And how would you get away with it and hide her body when you don't have the resources already there? And you have to be back at the bus at 3:30 looking completely normal, not disheveled, nothing.
And he was back there, normal, not disheveled, nothing.
So we know he doesn't have his jacket, but, you know, there's no blood, no disheveled, messy clothing, missing clothing. And if it's fair to say, at minimum, they departed the parking lot or Klingman's Dome at 12 and made a clean 40-minute walk, which to me is very unlikely, to Andrew's Bald. They arrive at 12:40. At the earliest, the absolute earliest, to have lunch. That means if you want to suggest that Simpson had anything to do with anything, he has 12:40, 1:40, 1:40 to 2:40, and 2:40 to 3:30 to have done what I feel like would be nearly impossible without resources or knowledge of how to take care of a body.
Okay, so that leaves us with what? Random foul play and...
Well, hang on a second. There were a couple of other weird things about Robert. So the other couple of weird things that happened was at some point, very, very much after she went missing and the searches were still going on, Trenny's brother actually found a comb that was 100% Trenny's in Robert's car. I believe Trenny had this comb, and maybe it was Robert as well, her brother, that had the comb. It was a particular comb. Trenny never did anything without it, ever. Like, it was stuck to her. And it was actually found in his car, like I said. And when Trenny's brother confronted him about it, he had said basically that Trenny gave it to him for safekeeping.
Her comb?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't. And then the other odd thing was, I guess Robert had gone to the Gibson home when all of them were out, and he had been in their house at some point, which just is weird. Like, why would you go into somebody's house when no one was home and you know full well that they're not? Robert basically kind of faded into the background after that, and Trenny's brother no longer chose to have a relationship with him. I guess he felt like it was too weird. For me, that doesn't really convince me fully that he had anything to do with anything. I mean, the comb at face value is weird, but I just have to wonder if she left it on the bus or something like that, and he took it as like an odd memento or something. You know, I know it's a weird thing. I wouldn't do it, but I don't know. Maybe he wanted to be close to her or whatever. I don't know if he had a crush on her. Your guess is as good as mine.
Okay, well, that's weird. But, so, all right, so let's pretend we're going to put all the weirdness aside, because logistically, he couldn't have the time or the capacity to do it, right? Where does that leave us?
Yeah, I mean, so, like, you could, I feel like you could do something if you knew the terrain really well. And you knew where to hide a body that no one would find it. No dogs, no searchers. And I just can't see a young person having that much knowledge about a national park and its terrain to accomplish that. And don't forget, you know, you'd be carrying a body.
And he didn't get a chance to think about it ahead of time because he didn't know where they were going.
Even better of a point. So to me, it just kind of doesn't make sense. Another weird thing that happened that isn't really a theory per se, and it doesn't really have any ties to anything else per se, is that when Trenny disappeared, she had this ring, and it was like a sapphire ring of some sort. And everyone said she always wore it, and she definitely had it on when she disappeared. Well, it was found to be in the possession of a girl at the high school. And this girl was very much like, oh, I don't know where I got it kind of thing, and gave no clear-cut answers. And she really couldn't explain how she had it.
So all you're doing is creating more questions for me?
I know. I know. I know.
Can we rule anything out?
Well, I don't know. You tell me. Let me just finish the last couple of theories. So there is another theory that I also forgot to mention when I first started discussing the theories, is an old classmate of Trenny's who seemed to have had a crush on her and had actually been pretty scary. He broke into the home at one point and hoped.
Why are all these people going into their house?
I know, right? So weird. And actually, he had scared the family, and Hope had actually shot him in the foot. He did end up going to like a juvenile facility for some period of time, and he did make threats that he'd kill Trenny when he got out and all of those things. However, he returned to the school, which again also would not happen in the 2020s. Different story, different day. And he was actually found and recorded to be in classes on the day that Trenny disappeared. So as much as that seemed like a really weighted theory, like it made sense, it doesn't appear as though he would have had the means or opportunity to do anything either. Then we have the random foul play, which I'm pretty sure I could say that is the last theory, which is she was alone at an opportunistic time on the trail, and she was abducted. Some articles suggest the possibility that she was held somewhere briefly, like in the parking lot or somewhere near Klingman's Dome, where she was removed and brought somewhere else when searchers were no longer in the area. And I guess I could say maybe that's possible, but that seems like it requires a lot.
So it's funny because I actually thought foul play would be like the second highest theory.
And what would be the first?
Something happened to her on the trail and she died because of the element.
So that's basically where I'm at. and I feel like I came to that conclusion pretty fast.
But why no body, Amy? Why no body? How far did she wander?
So, feel like I need to go walk this trail and see what the terrain is really like. I just wonder if she slipped and fell off a steep ledge or something of that nature, and her body had just gone so far down the cliff or the decline that searchers weren't really able to access it.
And what, she immediately died on impact? Or was unconscious or whatever?
I think so, because if she just had like a broken leg or an injury when people were calling for her, or when she did fall, she would have screamed and there would have still been people on the trail.
Right, and that was my logic too, is like if she was calling for help, would we have heard her?
Right. Yeah, and it just doesn't, like, something like that seems more plausible than someone laying in wait and being able to remove someone broad daylight from a trail without any issue, without anyone.
Well, I don't know that they were laying in wait. It could have been a crime of opportunity.
Well, that's kind of what I mean, but someone's, like, waiting for that opportunity and kind of pounces.
Yeah, but okay, so I'm gonna totally make a connection right now, but isn't that what we thought happened to Abby and Libby? They weren't the intended, I mean, they were the targets, but like, it wasn't pre-planned, it was just someone that had the opportunity?
Yeah, I think when we talked about this, we had to dice out what we meant as well. Yeah, so I agree with that, but in the case of Abby and Libby, I think, and similarly, if we were going that with that theory here, it's someone who has scoped the area, knows what they want to do, has fantasies, has locations, knows the place inside and out, and then visits there frequently waiting for that opportunity.
Right, and you don't think that a group of high school students is the right opportunity?
It is. I guess I just think that you are really ballsy to do that broad daylight with a tall adult, you know, essentially she's an adult, without kicking, screaming, or getting the attention of someone that you don't want to get the attention of.
Or you just incapacitate her quickly. Or you have a gun.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I didn't even think gun at all. But you're right. You're absolutely right.
I very much tie it to Delphi. You know, Abby and Libby. We talk about how someone overpowered two 14-year-old, 13-year-old girls. Yes, they're younger, but, like, there's two of them. And our only solution, and we did this on Patreon, was they had a weapon.
Yes, because otherwise you'd yell.
Right. So, and I'm not saying I'm landing here for Trenny. I'm just saying that for me, it surprises me that you dismissed it as quickly as you did.
I know.
Because I think it has more validity.
Yeah, I think you're right. Maybe I overshot a little bit. You're probably right. It does have more validity. But at the end of the day, I still do think that it makes far more sense that she just wasn't watching where she stepped. She was paying more attention to the trees and the plants and the flowers and slipped off the cliff or some type of steep decline.
My only thing with that is she would have had to have been unconscious really quickly. And I'm assuming if we're talking about trail, right, she wouldn't have wandered more than, I don't know. I can't imagine she wandered that far off a trail. So when they were searching, I have to assume they, like, if the trail is, you know, I'm going to use fake whatever, 2 feet wide, they're looking, you know, 6 feet in each direction.
So at face value, yes, but we really don't know how far away from a group that she got.
But she's on the same trail.
Right, but then I go to, what if they weren't able to get to some of the areas that she could have fallen to?
They still would have seen her. Even if it's a cliff and you can't get there, you're going to look over it, right?
Yeah, but you have to assume there's lots of brush and there's lots of trees and...
So you're assuming that she, this 16-year-old girl, is now going to go traipsing through the woods by herself, off in La La Land, off the trail? And how far?
Well, what if she just stepped off the trail and kind of got lost?
Okay, and how far did she walk? If she got to the spot at 12:40, right, and they had lunch, right?
And I think that's such an overshot. I mean, if I had to guess, really, it's probably more like 1:30 or 2.
That makes it even like a smaller window. So let's say she gets there at 1:30. How far can she walk off a trail, not in clothing appropriate for the climate or the terrain, in 2 hours?
Well, we're not just thinking 2 hours anymore. We're thinking...
No, we are. Oh, well, I guess you're right, because no one noticed her missing that.
Well, yeah, so we have the search team arguably there as early as 4, but as late as 6. I'm sorry, 4:30,
and my guess would
as late as 6.
Right, but by 4:30, aren't they just yelling her name over and over again? So if she was within earshot...
But if we're saying that she got off the trail at, say, 1:30 or 2, she could have been far enough away to not have heard anyone calling her name.
I think that in my head, logically, the idea that a 16-year-old girl is going to just go wandering off in the woods by herself in a climate she didn't know, in a terrain she didn't know, I find that more difficult to believe than a random stranger would cause her harm.
See, I don't. I think it makes more sense to me that she had an accident or got lost and then had an accident or succumbed to the elements.
So we both agree that she didn't leave her life.
I don't think Robert Simpson's involved.
Yep, I agree with you there. So I would say for me, it's like 60% foul play, 40% she's lost. My only issue is, where is the body?
True.
After all these years, no one has stumbled across anything.
Right. I mean, at this point, there might be parts of the jacket still left and her clothing.
I mean, for sure, bones.
Well, yeah, but I'm talking about if you're walking a trail, scraps of an orange jacket. Well, no, not necessarily.
That wouldn't catch my eye.
And I think of all the snow and the debris that has grown through the years. Yeah. It really still doesn't change anything for me, though. I'm still more like 80% an accident, a tragic accident, 20% foul play, random.
You want to open it up at that point?
I do. So what do you guys think?
Okay, so we all need you to weigh in and tell us what you think.
And all 50,000 of you who requested this case, I am waiting for you in the comments.
Yes, please.
All right, guys. Well, that's all we have for this week.
And as Amy probably doesn't remember, next week is Labor Day weekend, and we are taking the weekend off with our families. So we will be back in 2 weeks with a whole new case.
All right.
Bye. Bye.
For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
The Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman. Audio production
by Amy Lamar.